When she was 18, her father gave her the advice she needed to follow her dreams and become a writer. The next day, he had a heart attack and died in her arms. She did become a writer and a business owner and then a wife and mother. Today, after 13 books, a million of them in print, she's an award-winning syndicated columnist, a radio and TV host, and the owner of two successful companies. And now, Elise is here to help you rebuild your life. Stay tuned. This is gonna be good. This is the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours.
Good morning, everybody. It is 11:07 here at WSB. I'm Elise Glink, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Lines, as always, at the beginning of the show, they're wide open. So if you've got a question for me, now is the time to call, 404-872-0750. Let's warm up by talking about the stock market this week. Wow, what a roller coaster. I'm sitting here looking at the weekend journal, Wall Street Journal, and I'm looking at the ups and downs of the week. It's a little box, gray box, up in the top right-hand corner. And it shows that the Dow started the week just over 17,750. And that was on Monday. And then by Tuesday, it had fallen down a couple of hundred points or a little bit less, and then went up a little and then dropped on the next day down like another 300 points. Very up and down, and then built its way back up and up, had a big day on the 8th, and then fell down again 170 points or so on Friday to end the day about a half a percent below where it started at 17,737.37, who's counting, right? And it was all because, well, there was so much craziness in the market, right? We have had an oil issue. Oil is now down around $50 a barrel. It fell below $50 a barrel, which was just causing... There are people in this week's Barron's that are talking about $20 a barrel oil, which for consumers who haven't had a break in 8 years, that sounds pretty darn good. But that is making corporate America very, very nervous. It's great for shipping and trucking and, you know, rail, anybody who actually uses the oil. Airlines probably benefit some on that. Don't expect to see your airplane ticket go down. Although I did just buy a round trip ticket to New York for $150, which was like, I haven't had that kind of a ticket in a long time. So we see the price of oil fall, and then, of course, the drama in France and the million people marched this morning, which is just, I'm glued to the TV set. I can't take my eyes off of it. I'm so impressed that the France itself, but also the world leaders, European leaders, were able to rally so quickly and get there. But that had a definite scary effect in the marketplace as well this week. And so we watched the Dow just go all over the place. And lots of the bears came out and said, look, we are way over our heads with this bull. We really have to pull back. We saw the bulls going, no, that we have a whole, you know, look at our year. We're going to be up another 8 to 10% this year and blah, blah, blah. And meantime, it's just getting, you know, the jobs number look good, but not great, right? A lot of people who are now, quote unquote, employed are in part-time jobs. Wages fell a little bit in December after rising a little bit in November. Everybody thought, oh, well, if wages go up, you know, the Fed is going to, you know, pull back or push forward or whatever. But now in Europe, which is facing a real deflationary period, they're talking about their Fed or their version of the Fed starting to push forward again and prime the pump. And so then the markets went up again. It's just, this is what I call reactive markets. There was a time, I promise you, there was a point in time where what happened in the stock market accurately forecasted what would happen in the economy maybe 9, 10, 12 months out. That is no longer the case. We have seen the stock market triple since 2009, and the economies of the world have not done the same. So there's really a disconnect, and as long as everybody understands that the stock market, the U.S. stock market, is completely disconnected from the fortunes of the economy, at least for now, you'll be in better shape. 404-872-0750. A little bit later in the show, I wanted to talk about this idea of an elevator pitch. I wrote about it on the Equifax Finance blog this week. The idea of an elevator pitch for business, right? Everybody knows you need an elevator pitch. I think you need an elevator pitch for your finances. And I'll talk about that a little later in the show. All right, let's get to the phones. 404-872-0750. Paul joins me on the line. Hi, Paul.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Very good. I'm calling about a possible refi for my home that I really just bought last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm at 465, I believe.
Okay.
No rates have gone down. And really what I'm looking for is my realtor said that the equity in the house, actually, I pretty much got instant equity when I bought the house. So I don't know if that's the case. I'm trying to see if I can use some of that.
All right. So you bought your house last year, and
yep.
I see your heir in the background yelling, which is so cute.
Sorry.
By the way. No, don't be sorry. It's a family show. So why did you end up with a 4.65% last year? Did you put less than 20% down? How did that work for you?
I did an 80-10-10.
I got
a second loan in the form of a HELOC.
Mm-hmm.
And down.
I didn't know that they were doing those again, so good
they
for
were,
you.
There were, yeah, she said there were very few, but yeah, I was
okay.
able to do that.
Okay, so when you put down less than 20%, you typically don't get the best rate. But did you buy a foreclosure? Have you fixed up the house? What have you done to build in more equity?
Really not a lot. Replaced some of the carpet. Took down some trees that were close to the house, but that's about it.
Okay.
I'm just saying that based on market conditions, our realtor thought we had, you know, instant equity in the house.
Okay.
But I don't know if that's the case, and I don't know if I can use it.
Okay. Well, so really it just depends on if you bought your house, let's just say, for $200,000 and everything in your neighborhood is now selling at $250,000, that's market
right.
conditions pushing up the value of your property, which is great.
Right.
If you bought a house that was distressed and it was the last one in the market to go, by nature, everything would move up in value. So, yeah, your broker could be right about that. The only way you're going to know is to go back to your real estate agent and say to her, hey, can you share with me some of the numbers of things that are going on in the marketplace? I would love to see what's going on so I can think about doing a refi. And then you can go to a lender once you have those numbers and say, look, this is what I think is going on. What could you, assuming this is the case, what could you do for me? And then they'll
okay.
come back and they'll tell you, yeah, we can do a refi for you. We can do this and this and this. You know, you're not paying the PMI, but you are paying the interest on the second mortgage. Be great to get rid of that and have a single 80% mortgage or less even, you know, at 3.5%. I'm all for that.
Right. Right.
So
typically, what is the, what is that going to cost me on percentage of the loan?
Well, it kind of depends. You know, a lot of people are wrapping those costs into the loans themselves. Do you know what your credit score is at?
It's come down a little bit. It's above 700, probably 720, somewhere in there.
Okay. So that's another thing that's weighing down on you, because the very best credit scores out there, the ones that are above 760 and in some cases 780, they're the ones getting the very best rate. You may not qualify for 3.5%. That assumes a 20%, at least 20% down and a top credit score. So your first things you have to do, the first thing is that you have to go figure out what your actual credit score is.
Right.
And you can go to myfico.com and you can get a FICO score there. You can go to annualcreditreport.com, pull a copy of your credit report, and then pay for a copy of your score from Experian, Equifax, or TransUnion. But FICO is the score that really matters for you.
This
at this point.
Question. 20%, you said 20% down. Can that be in the form of equity that's in the house?
Yes.
Where you don't
mm-hmm.
have to get cash?
Yeah. No, that's
okay.
that's where you're at. Now that you
okay.
own the house, it's about 20. It's 20% equity. So, in other words, if your house is worth $250, you need to have equity. Your loan needs to be below $200.
Gotcha. Right.
So
okay.
that's fine. So once you have that, then you're in great shape. And then you obviously have to think about your credit history and credit score. So take a look at your credit history and figure out what it is that's not going well for you and try and figure out what you can do to fix that over the next few months. I don't think interest rates are going to move.
Let me say this. It was basically I am not paying interest on my HELOC because I'm floating that on a 0% interest credit cards. So that's kind of why it went down for. So that's going to pay off.
So when you say you're doing an 80-10-10, the 10 is you on your credit cards?
No, it was a HELOC, but then I used that money in a credit card form. And then just, was paying the credit card minimums at 0% and paying zero on the HELOC.
Right.
So,
but what that does is it
brings credit down a little bit.
Right, because it looks like you're utilizing more of your credit than you should be.
Right. And how long does it take to come back up once you pay it off?
Once you pay it off, it could, it's about credit utilization. The credit utilization ratio should never be above 30%, really. So if you if you have $100,000 in credit on a credit card, you should never charge more than $30,000 at any one point in time.
Right, and once that gets paid off, is that
it should start to bounce up? It depends on all the other factors in your credit history, but it should start to bounce up fairly quickly, like within 3 to 6 months.
Excellent. All right.
So, but I would go and check that out and figure out exactly what it is that's going on. Figure out what your score is now and then start to give a call to some local lenders to figure out what they can do to help you. And hopefully you'll be able to refinance and it won't cost you too much. Thanks for calling, Paul. Good luck. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB.
Elise Glink, Sundays on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours.
It's 11:24 on the Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours here on WSB. Let's go back to the phones, 404-872-0750. Roxanne joins us on the line from Alpharetta. Hi, Roxanne.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Happy to do it. What's on your mind today?
I have money in a 403B plan, which I cannot transfer to my current employer plan. Mm-hmm. I would like to go ahead and put it in a 401 plan with, I think I'm Vanguard or Schwab, but I wanted to invest in stocks. I've never done that before. How do I review stocks and figure out which is the best stock or what the price is?
All right, let's back up a little bit. So mm-hmm. you were in what job were you at that you had a 403B? Because that's typically like a police officer, teacher, other things.
Hospital.
Okay. And now you work somewhere else?
I work for a school system.
Okay. So what you want to do is you want to take your 403B and you want to roll it into an IRA. You can't roll it into a 401K. Right? For that's because that's a job thing. That's for employers offering their employees. But you can roll it into an IRA, which is the same type of account, but that's what you're looking for, IRA.
Okay.
Once it's in the IRA, you can invest in anything. It's just a holding pot, like a tank, right? And you're going to fill it up with all kinds of things. So you want to fill it up with stocks. Why do you want to invest in stocks rather than in, say, an index mutual fund?
I was interested in purchasing stock. I've been hearing about these body cameras police officers are using, so I wanted to invest in a company that manufactures that. So I don't know how to do the research for that and then invest in a company that would be, manufacturing these cameras.
Okay. So there's a lot of different kinds of companies that want that. So you're talking about the thing that President Obama said he wanted to put a camera on every police officer's body.
Right.
Spend $43 million or something, whatever that was, to do that. And you want to invest in the company that's making that because you think that that's going to be a growth industry.
Yeah.
Okay. So without debating the merits of that particular thing, what you would do is you would open up your IRA. You would do a trustee-to-trustee transfer so the money doesn't come out and you don't pay taxes on it.
Okay.
You're writing that down?
Yes.
Good. And then once it's in there, then what you're going to do is start reading the Wall Street Journal every day and the New York Times business section, and you're going to go online and you're going to start to research those kinds of stories and look for the names of the companies that are mentioned as being possible manufacturers for them.
Okay.
And when we come back, I'm going to talk, so hang with us as we go to this break. You can hear the music playing, so we're going to have to go to a break now. But there are some real dangers in pursuing this kind of investing single-mindedly. And I'm okay if you want to take a little flyer on some stocks, but you have to keep the larger portfolio issue in mind because you never want to become overweighted in any one particular stock or company, and you really don't want to take a flyer on some of these small, tiny companies if you don't have a whole lot of money. So stay with me, Roxanne. We'll talk about this in a moment on the Elyse Glink Show, Rebuilding America, One House at a Time, starting with yours.
Every Sunday, Elyse Glink is live, answering your money and real estate questions. Rebuilding America, One House at a Time, starting with yours. News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
It's 11:36 on the Elyse Glink Show, Rebuilding America, One House at a Time, starting with yours. 404-872-0750. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K, and connect with me on LinkedIn as well. Just type in my name and I'll pop up there too. So we're talking with Roxanne, and Roxanne had a 403B when she worked with a hospital. Now she's working, Now she's working with a school system, so she has a different plan. She wants to roll the 403B into an IRA, so we're going to do a trustee-to-trustee transfer, and now she wants to invest in stocks. And so, Roxanne, over the break, I thought a little bit more about this, and one of the issues that I have with buying single stocks, especially in a climate like this, but really since about 2005 or 2006, is I have a real problem with how big companies keep their books. And while everybody is supposed to follow GAAP financing, in reality, there's a lot of room for manipulation. And it makes me very, very nervous. And so on a personal level, I made a decision a long time ago not to buy individual stocks anymore. And I just buy index mutual funds because index mutual funds will beat managed mutual funds like 85% of the time, which I think are pretty good odds. Now, becoming a stock picker requires, one, a good idea. And I have made a lot of money on individual stocks over the years. So I get that you want to do this. But the vast majority of what you have should go into an index mutual fund that invests at, let's say, 500 companies at a time or 10,000 companies. And if you want to take a little portion of what you have and then invest in individual stocks, I don't have a problem with it, right? And I don't have a problem with really good ideas like these body cameras, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of development going down the line. But I really feel very strongly that the vast majority of your retirement should not rest on one good idea. Because what if that one good idea is a good idea for 5 minutes? You buy the company, make a little bit of money, and then get busy with the rest of your life and stop paying attention. And that company stops being a good idea. Or there's new technology that comes along, like we're all going to make all of our police people cyborgs, and they don't need the cameras anymore because their eyes are cameras. I'm making this up, of course. But you can see what I'm saying. The technology is moving so quickly that you'd really have to commit to staying on top of that company and that investment almost on a daily or weekly basis so that you could watch and make sure that your investment's going in the right direction.
Okay. What about ETFs? I've been hearing a lot about ETFs. What are they and how do I, is that same as a mutual fund?
So an ETF is a shortened word for exchange-traded funds. It's actually ETF, not EFT.
Oh, okay.
ETF, exchange-traded funds. And they are similar to mutual funds in that they're a large group of companies, and you're basically buying shares in all of the companies at the same time. So that's like a mutual fund. The difference is with an exchange-traded fund, you can go in and out of it, day trade it, several times in a day. And with mutual funds, you buy it once at the end of the day at the closing price. So ETFs are great, and they allow day traders to trade. You're not going to be day trading. You're a teacher. And that is, and I am not a day trader. I am a radio talk show host and a owner of a content marketing company. Day trading is its own specialized field. I don't mind ETFs if you buy them and you just hold them the way that you do with a mutual fund. But the idea with ETFs is that you can day trade them.
Okay.
And then the real key for you is the difference between an indexed mutual fund and a managed mutual fund. So an indexed mutual fund is like you buy the index, right? S&P 500. That's the top 500 companies in the country. You can buy a total market index fund. So it samples the 10,000 plus companies that are all traded. So as the market rises and falls, you get that. Or you can get a small cap, meaning smaller companies, mutual fund, index mutual fund, which just samples the Russell 2000 small cap. So one place to go for really good information is Morningstar.com. And Morningstar is an information company based in Chicago that sells a lot of research to big, huge companies, but it provides research, most of it free, to people like you, individual consumers that are looking to learn about different kinds of index funds. And you might want to do that. Now, a managed mutual fund means you're paying managed mutual price fees, very expensive, versus index mutual funds, which are basically very low cost. And, you know, you're paying for that expertise. But the index mutual fund is going to beat the managed mutual fund 85, even 90% of the time.
Wow.
So you're paying a lot of money, and only a few people are going to win that game. And I don't think the odds are with you in that. And so a lot of people feel exactly the same way. But you can buy an index mutual fund at almost anything, and you can buy an exchange-traded fund at almost anything, and Morningstar is a good place to help sort that out.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Good luck, and I love that you're focused on investing. 404-872-0750 on the Elyse Glink Show. Carl joins me on the line from Suwannee. Hi, Carl.
Hey, Elyse, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Love your show.
Hey, thanks. What's going on?
My daughter's house, who Thursday just had our first grandbaby.
Congratulations. Big day.
And 529 plans. One question was on 529 plans, do I, as grandpa, get a tax deduction for that? And the second question, if I may, involves can I rent my house for a short term, maybe a year, to reap the benefits of tax deductions for doing the repairs while it's rented?
Wow, that is not a short question. Okay. All right, let's start with the grandbaby in a 529. When you, as long as you are the owner of the 529, the grandbaby, is that a granddaughter or grandson?
Grandson.
Grandson, okay. Your grandson can be the beneficiary, but you as the owner would get any of the tax benefits of the contribution, as long as you own it. If you put it in your child's name, for your grandson, your son or your daughter, whichever it is, then they're the ones who would get the benefit, not you. But if you are the owner, you get the benefit. And they're the beneficiary, and that's actually great because that allows you to, you can't take it back, right? You can't take the money back, but, or if you did, there would be some consequences to that. But I believe as long as your name is on it and you're the owner of it, they're the beneficiary, you get the tax benefit.
All right.
Renting your house for the short term is interesting. There are some negatives to doing that. So when you rent your house, you're required to take depreciation. You will be able to take sort of the benefits, the pros and the cons. Are you intending to move back into it, or are you intending to then sell it?
I'll play it by ear, but that is an option, yeah.
Okay. So if you turn this into a rental property and then you sell it, and then you have a profit based on the sale, you're going to have to pay, you may have to pay taxes on the profit unless you do a 1031 tax-free exchange. So you don't get to, what you don't get to do, I don't think, although maybe you've got a smarter tax accountant than I have, you don't get to take your primary residence, turn it into a rental, write off $50,000 worth of expenses and repairs, take a loss and sell it, but reap the rest of the gain, because then you pay capital gains tax on the gain. Or if you do the 1031, then you're moving all the money into a 1031 and buying another rental property after that. And then there are some complicated rules if you turn that future rental property back into a primary residence. But I think if you do the numbers, if you've lived in your house a long time, and you're going to do these repairs, and you're going to sell the house, and you're going to have a huge gain, you and your wife can keep up to $500,000 in profits tax-free.
Okay.
When you sell as a primary residence, which you don't get for the rental property. And so I think you've got to think about it. If you're going to sell and you do have lived there a long time and you do have a huge gain, and how much are the expenses for the repairs?
I'm estimating about $35,000.
Right. And so what are you doing with the repairs? Are you doing a re-roofing? Are you repairing the mechanical system? What are you doing for the $35,000?
We got to put a retaining wall in the backyard, $15,000, and some plumbing and kitchen redos and stuff like that.
So as long as you're not, okay, so this is good because these are what are known as structural repairs or material repairs.
Mm-hmm.
So material repairs can help reduce any tax you would owe on profits. So if you have in excess of $500,000, and it's $250 per person. So if you were single and you bought it with a partner, you guys would still get $500, but each of you gets the $250. If you're married, the two of you guys together get $500. So if your profits were going to be, say, $535, you would be able to subtract the $35,000 that you're spending in material costs from the total when you're making that the cost basis analysis.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately figuring out the profit. So what you do when you calculate true profit on the sale of a primary residence, you take the cost of purchase, cost of sale, cost of any material changes, fixes, repairs, and subtract all of that, right, from your cost of sale. So the cost of the purchase, cost of the sale, like, and by cost of the sale, I mean like your broker commission and any kinds of fees that you would pay, you subtract all of that from the final cost of sale, from the final sales price, and that's the amount of profit that you have.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes, ma'am, it sure does.
So I think if you play those two things out together, unless you tell me you're getting into the investment property game, I would say to you, you're probably going to be best off back of the napkin, just keeping it as a primary residence and shelling out for the expenses of fixing it.
Hey, great. Thanks, Elise.
Hey, you're welcome. Thanks for calling, Carl. 47 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours. We had a really interesting comment earlier from one of our listeners. I was talking about a possibility of deflation with oil prices, and you know the idea that oil prices ended this week at $50 a barrel, and now people are talking about it going down to $20 a barrel, and what that's going to do. And one of our listeners chimed in: oil prices are diving; the dollar's on the way up. When will cars and other items tank in cost? And you know, my response was, I don't think car prices are going down anytime soon, but watch Europe right now because they've got deflation, and the deflation cycle could be very, very scary. It's taken Japan a really long time to build its way out of that one. 404-872-0750. It is 48 minutes past the hour. Stay tuned. I'll be back in a moment with more of the Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Glink is live, here to guide you through your money and real estate questions, only on News 95.5 and AM 750, WSB.
It's 54 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. All right, let's go back to the phones. Charles joins me on the line from Lawrenceville. Hi, Charles.
Hey, how are you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, I'm doing well, thank you. What's going on today?
Well, a couple of years ago, I lost my job of 14 years and ended up short-selling a house.
Mm.
And the short-sell department had accepted the offer and was working on it, but they took so long to process it that the foreclosure department also started working on the file. And under the advice of an attorney, I filed a bankruptcy with no intentions of going through it, but just to stall the foreclosure until the short sale could go through. And that worked great, except that I learned to my shock and surprise afterwards that apparently if you file a bankruptcy, even if you have no intentions of going through with it and you withdraw it voluntarily, it stays on your credit report for 7 years. Is that correct? And if so, is there any way to mitigate that?
Well, you got good advice, and I would call it bad advice, and bad meaning incomplete advice. Or maybe you didn't ask the right questions. Bankruptcies do stay on your credit history because, of course, the bankruptcy court has no way of knowing whether or not you need to file it or why you filed it. You could have filed something else. And this is where the mediocre advice comes in. You could have filed a stay of foreclosure, which would stop the foreclosure, but not throw you into bankruptcy. So there were other legal avenues. So the lawyer who, did you go to a bankruptcy lawyer?
Yes.
So if you had, did you ask when you went to the bankruptcy lawyer, is there anything else that you could do to stop the foreclosure?
You know, I didn't, this was the first time I had been through the process, and I didn't know what questions to ask, and that was just what the lawyer advised me. I called him up, I said, this is what's happening, and they said, we'll file a bankruptcy, you can withdraw it, you don't have to go through with it, but it will absolutely solve the foreclosure. So I did not know the questions to ask.
Right. So, you know, I think you kind of tied your own hands there, because there were some other legal options that, it had you run across, I think you would have still had the foreclosure issue. That probably got hit your credit as well. But now you've got this bankruptcy. And, yes, it does take 7 years for bankruptcy to clear. You can put a 100-word note on your credit file that the credit reporting agencies are required to provide to anybody who asks for your credit history. But, yeah, that's going to be a problem. How is the rest of what's going on in your credit? Like, what else is going on? I mean, are you paying bills on time? Is everything else? Did you find another job?
Yeah. Actually, the only payments that were ever late or not paid was the primary house mortgage, mm-hmm. and also I had a home equity line of credit. And, you know, the real estate agent I was working with had said that he had had another couple that had gone through a short sale, and the credit was hurt minimally. It was only like maybe 40 or 50 points. The credit score got dinged because they were able to work it out, you know, the timing, you know. But, yeah, I mean, I made all my credit card, utility, all the other bills were paid on time. It's just the only bills were paid late with the primary mortgage and the equity line of credit. But the problem is I've got a quote-unquote bankruptcy
right.
on my credit now.
Well, I personally can't think of any way around that.
Okay.
You know, unfortunately, the best thing that you're going to be able to do is just to push forward and just keep your credit score as good as it can be and your credit history as clean as it can be by paying all of your bills on time going forward. But it's a pretty serious ding, and it's unfortunate it happened to you because it's like a kick in the teeth right after you lost your job and all the rest of it. And I'm
right.
just so sorry.
A stay of foreclosure was an option, though, I guess.
A stay of foreclosure should have been an option for you. I'm not sure the bankruptcy attorney knew that, or even if they did, that it would have been in the bankruptcy attorney's own interest to do that. There are, you know, the legal system is really interesting. There are all kinds of little quirks and issues, and sometimes when you're so specialized, you're a bankruptcy attorney and you're doing, you know, 1,000 bankruptcies in a year, that's not what you're thinking about. You're thinking about getting another set of paperwork filed in order to stop something, and what he told you was true. It would stop the foreclosure. It just had some unintended consequences, and unfortunately, a lot of times legal action has that. 58 minutes past the hour. Charles, I hope things go better for you. On the Elise Kling Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB.
Elise Kling, Sundays on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. It is 12:07 on the Elise Kling Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB. So this week on the Equifax Finance blog, I wrote a post, well, it was right before Christmas, actually, 7 tips for crafting the perfect elevator pitch. And the idea is that anybody who has a young business, you know, you need an elevator pitch. You need to be able to explain what you're doing from the time you start at ground floor to, say, 30th floor. You need to be able to articulate exactly what it is you're trying to do. And it has to be detailed and interesting enough to hook the listener on your business. And, you know, again, short enough so you don't bore somebody to death, idea being, you know, an elevator ride. So an elevator pitch, I wrote, is a great way to market your small business to new prospects, right? Because you might find yourself with an opportunity to kind of briefly introduce you and yourself, yourself and your business to somebody. But, you know, the same approach, I think, would work really well if you're thinking about your finances or you're a real estate investor. So think about these seven tips, and I'm going to just talk about them in light of, you know, what you would do with a company elevator pitch, right? But let's think about them. Let's reframe it and think about it in terms of your finances or, you know, being a real estate investor, because I think that there's a lot of potential outreach that you can do, particularly on the real estate investment side, when you start chatting with people and they ask you what kind of property you're interested in or what do you want to do with your finances, what are you trying to get to? Having an answer that works and is short, is concise, is interesting, is focused, says a lot about you as the investor. And in my series, the Intentional Investor series, How to Be Wildly Successful in Real Estate, I talk about this idea of being able to craft a pitch and being able to focus your message into a way that just helps you as an investor, because now you are more focused, you're more thoughtful, you're more intentional about the investments you're going to make. So, you know, as a small business owner, if you're crafting an elevator pitch, you want to start by fully realizing what you and your company have to offer. As an investor, it's the same thing. What is it you're trying to invest? How much are you trying to invest? How much of your time are you going to be investing? Right? Number two, you want to find an attention-grabbing detail, statistic, question, or anecdote that makes people pay attention to what you're actually saying. For a real estate investor, you may turn that around and say, right, well, I've, you know, as an investor who recently bought a shopping mall, or I just bought a single family house, or I'm interested in four flats and just bought one over in Midtown, or whatever it is. That's a way to get people, hook them in to what you're actually saying and bring them in. You also have to think about who you are and what you are trying to do and how your experience lends credibility. If you're doing this as a business pitch, right? You want to be the owner of the company expressing what you're trying to do. If you're an investor, it's who you are, what you've done, where you're trying to go with those investments. And the idea with an elevator pitch is to just kind of edit it down, rearrange your words, change your phrases, cut down your message, be really succinct. As an investor, you want to be really succinct as well. You want to have a very clear visualization of where you want to go, because only then can you translate that for somebody else, right? Really important. Your tone for these elevator pitches should be likable, articulate, and friendly, right? Because you want whoever you're talking to help you. And that works in the investment side as well. You know, if you seem reasonable and approachable and you talk to somebody about your interest in buying single-family houses, you never know. That person may have a cache of single-family houses they're trying to unload, or they may know somebody who does. And if they like you and they think you're smart and well-intentioned, they're much more likely to help you than if they think you're a hawk out for something. Point number six that I give to when I talk about how to craft an elevator pitch to small businesses, I talk about creating multiple versions for different kinds of audiences, right? Vendors, customers, investors, and different lengths, right? You want it to be 30 to 60 seconds or three sentences, basically, but you may want a longer version of it. And as an investor in real estate or in your, you know, whatever you're trying to invest in, it really helps to have a variety of pitches. Once you find out who you're talking to, you can, in your head, flip the switch and out will pop the, you know, elevator pitch that's appropriate for that person, right? So if it's a financial advisor, if it's a company that you're looking to invest in, if it's a real estate broker, you know, who works in, let's say, industrial properties instead of in residential properties, you can change and craft. You've got to be nimble, right? It's about being nimble and listening well as much as it is creating these different versions. And then finally, you know, I tell small business owners, you've got to practice what you're doing. Right? Nobody gets good the first time out. I was coaching a woman who has started a foundation that helps companies with green, being more green. That's just sort of superficial, but it's really developing green systems start to finish in the whole life cycle of the business. And she didn't really have it in her head what she wanted to do, and so I was coaching her on how to rethink what she is, right? She's really a green systems consultant, and we gave her some language that helped her communicate that idea in a bigger and more articulate and friendly sort of way. But she has to practice. I mean, she did well the first time out, which I was able to watch, which I don't always get to do. It's like being a fly on the wall. But, you know, you need to think about how you're presenting yourself and the investment opportunities you're looking for, and then, you know, do that over and over again. Do it in front of a mirror. You want to appear really polished whenever you're out there, because then people will think that you're a really smart and polished investor, and that's exactly what we want them to think. All right, 404-872-0750. I'll put up, I'll tweet out the link to that story, The 7 Tips for Crafting the Perfect Elevator Pitch, out on Twitter, at Glink. Follow me there or on our Facebook page. Okay, 14 minutes past the hour. Let's go to the phones. 404-872-0750. Judy joins me on the line from Marietta. Hi, Judy.
Hey, Elise. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Well, it's been a rough couple of months. I had to quit my job and go down and help my sister take care of my mother until she passed away.
I'm so sorry, Judy.
Thank you. It was very difficult, but she was 93 and she had an amazing life, and we were holding her hand singing to her when she died. So that's the best way to do it.
It is the best way, but still, it doesn't take away the heartbreak and the loss and all the rest of the stuff.
And now I'm in Marietta preparing. I had to leave my job, and I'm preparing to move to Florida where she lives to clean out her house, which she was in for 46 years.
Oh, my gosh. No, I hope your sister's got some friends down there who can help.
Yeah. Well, there's two major questions that come up immediately. Because I'm selling on behalf of my sister and I, and we're going to split the proceeds, and two things. Obviously, I will be doing this pretty much full-time when I get down there. And the good news is that the Florida market, as you probably know, is better than it's been in probably 6 or 7 years.
Yep.
What I'm worried about is that I keep hearing people say the interest rates are probably going to start going up reasonably soon. And my concern is that going to affect how quickly I should move the house? And because really, I mean, the furniture we can get a certain amount of money for, but the house is really what's of value, and I'm going to be getting it ready for sale. So the first question is, what do you think that is going to happen with the interest rates? And the second question is, I personally, my sister and I may disagree on this, but I don't think we should do a lot of work to the house, because it's going to have to be updated anyway, and whoever buys it's going to do that, other than just stuff that has to be done.
So let me.
And what's your opinion on that?
All right. Well, let me go backwards. Well, I'll just give you the high point. Interest rates aren't going anywhere in 2015, I don't think. There's too much negative pressure right now. You know, as far out as anybody can see, and honestly, as I say on the show all the time, my, you know, crystal ball is just as cracked as anybody else's. But assume for the next 6 to 9 months, interest rates are going to pretty much stay where they are, and home prices will continue to move up. And I don't know, where in Florida is the house?
It's in DeLand, which is just between Daytona Beach and Sanford, if you know where that is.
I know where Daytona Beach is. I don't know where DeLand is.
Well, it's 20 miles west of Daytona Beach, and it's a really good community, but
she's
in a good location.
Okay. So, you know, prices will continue to go up there a little bit at least. And, you know, as the economy continues to improve over the next year in this country, that'll be fine. But interest rates, I don't think, are going anywhere anytime fast.
Okay,
so now, if she's lived in her house for 46 years, has she done anything to the house in the last 30 years?
Yes, she's had new roof put on. She's had landscaping done. She's had, well, except for the chinch bugs, which you always get in Florida.
Right.
But, anyway, she said the heat pump was updated.
Okay, let me stop you right there, because you're not telling me what I really am looking to hear, which is, oh, yeah, we have a brand new kitchen and new bathrooms and new floors and new everything. So,
well, the only major update they did was it was a 3-2, and they added a huge den onto the house, which is a real selling point, because it could be used as another bedroom, it could be used as a den, it could be used as an office.
I got it, but
that's pretty much it. Yeah.
Okay, so no new kitchens, new baths. It's not there, anybody who comes in is going to have to do real work to it. You need to discern whether, and this is going to be your job, right? Whether
yep.
if you put in a new kitchen and new baths, if that is going to more than equal the amount of money you're going to spend to do it. My guess is no. So then you are right and your sister's not. All you do is you maybe replace the carpeting and repaint the house and clear everything out, and you're done. And that shouldn't necessarily take all that long. So I'm glad that you're going to be doing it. It's going to be rough emotionally. That's going to be the hardest part for you. I mean, actually getting somebody in to clean out a house is not that big a deal. But to go through piece by piece and say goodbye to all of the things and have that emotional moment with it, that could take you some time. So I think what you need to do is set yourself some goals. You know, this week we're going to do this, and basically week by week map out how you're going to progress through the sale of this property and what's going to happen after that. And you know, hopefully in 3 months to 6 months, you're going to be all done, and then you're going to sell the house. So the interest rates is off the market. Don't worry about that. It's off the table. You shouldn't have to worry about doing anything to the house other than basic repairs. But a real estate agent may say to you, hey, this is a teardown. Don't do anything. So you really have to ascertain what that's going to be, and you need to start talking to real estate agents about it so that you find exactly the right person. And let me know what happens, Judy, and have safe travels and good luck down there, because you're going to need it. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Klink. Back in a moment with our prize pack, weekend prize pack, and more of the Elise Klink Show. Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Klink is live, answering your money and real estate questions. Rebuilding America, one house at a time. Starting with yours, News 95.5 and AM 750, WSB.
It's 1225 on the Elise Klink Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time. Starting with yours on WSB. We have our WSB with McDonald's weekend prize pack to give away. It includes a family four-pack of tickets to see the Gwinnett Gladiators versus the Indy Fuel on January 19th at the arena at Gwinnett Center, and a four-pack of tickets to the Progressive Insurance Atlanta Boat Show January 15th through the 18th at the Georgia World Congress Center. Prize pack value is $148. We're going to give it away to our, let's see, fifth caller. One day I'm going to change that, and Crystal is going to be all flummoxed. The prize pack line, 404-741-0750. Crystal will be taking your call. We are going to get back to the phones in just a minute. We have running a little bit short of time, as usual. Well, maybe we can kick it off with the question. So Romeo joins me on the line from Atlanta. Hey, Romeo. We're going to be able to take your question, then I'm going to have to answer it after the break. What do you have on your plate today?
My question is, my mother, when she got up in age, we had the deed of the house transferred to my name and my brother's name. My question is, you know, once she passes, we're going to sell the home, and I was wondering what our, as far as tax consequences might be, how it would be treated, since it's not my primary and it's not a vacation home.
This is, you know, every week I take this question, and it's like the biggest mistake the parents make. They transfer the house into the kid's name, which means you just assume the house as a cost, at a cost basis that your mom had for it. And so now when you sell it, you're going to pay taxes on it that are like a long-term capital gains tax, but you're still going to pay taxes. Whereas if she sold it, or sold it to somebody else, or you inherited it, you wouldn't pay that. And so it's going to cost you a lot. You might want to see if you can transfer it back to her before she dies. And then if she wants to put it into a trust, it'll transfer to you when she dies. You'll be named as the beneficiaries. But then you won't have the issue of what the taxes are going to be. You'll inherit it, you know, at the full value and be able to sell it without paying any tax. That's really the best thing to do. Otherwise, you're going to pay long-term capital gains tax, and that's just going to stink. All right, 27 minutes past the hour. I guess we got that one answered. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Klink. Rebuilding America, one house at a time. Starting with yours. Stay tuned. I'll be back in a moment on WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Klink is live, here to guide you through your money and real estate questions. Only on News 95.5 and AM 750. WSB.
It's It's 12:36 on the Elise Kling Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB, our number 404-872-0750. On my Twitter feed, at Glink, I have just posted the link that I was talking about in the elevator pitch, and also that tomorrow is big tape day in our offices. We have our own in-house studio, and we're taping some new real estate minutes and big money real estate daily updates. So you're going to want to tune in for those. Follow me on Twitter for all this kind of news, at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. All right, 37 minutes past the hour. We go back to the phones. There are a couple of lines open, 404-872-0750. Scott joins me on the line from Cartersville. Hi, Scott.
Hi, this is Denise. I'm Scott's wife.
I see, Denise.
How are you? Totally fine.
I'm good. How are you?
Fine, thank you. I actually just had a question to see what you thought about reverse mortgages.
Okay, well, give me a little bit of context. They can be good, bad, but almost always expensive.
Right. Okay, basically, we paid cash for the house, took it out of our retirement savings.
Mm-hmm.
And so that left us a little bit cash flow poor. So I was looking into maybe doing a reverse mortgage to just have an emergency amount in the bank in case you run into problems.
Okay. Well, I think that's an expensive way to go. I would much prefer you go and get a home equity line of credit that you just leave there and not touch.
I see. Okay.
The reverse mortgage, you're going to pay a whole lot of money to get a reverse mortgage. And I know there are a lot of famous actors on TV now with infomercials pitching, you know, that you should do a reverse mortgage. And for some people, I think it's fine. But you're just looking for cash.
Right.
And so instead, I think I'd rather you go into your bank and take out a $30,000 line of credit, home equity line of credit, for 10 years at a low interest rate, and then just leave it there untouched unless you do need it.
Right. And then would you only pay interest if you were to use it then?
Correct. You only pay interest if you use it, whereas with a reverse mortgage, you wouldn't pay anything back. You don't do it, but you pay, you know, up to $6,000 up front to do the reverse mortgage.
Right, right.
And then, you know, as you use that, you'll have to pay that back when you sell the house. Now, I don't know how old you are, but you said you used your retirement savings to buy the house. I assume you and your spouse are over 62?
Yes, we are both over 62, yes.
And how long do you anticipate staying in the property?
We bought this house as our last house, figuring we would stay here, but, you know, you never know what might come around the corner, so.
Okay.
But, you know.
How old are you? How old are you?
I'm 63.
Uh-huh.
And about 65.
So that's a long time to go. You know, you both could live at least 20 or 30 more years.
Right.
And so you might stay in this house for 20 or 30 more years, but the odds are you probably won't. And so if you do a reverse mortgage and you end up taking that money and sticking it into a bank account, you'll have to pay all that back at a fairly high rate of interest.
Uh-huh.
Not credit card interest rates, but higher than the 3.5% that you're paying right now for a home equity line of credit. And even if the home equity line of credit is 5%, if you never use it, you're not going to be paying any of that interest. And I think you control things a lot better with the home equity line of credit.
Okay. Okay. So, well, I appreciate that information because I was kind of torn as to which would be better. So this helps me a lot.
Oh, clearly it's going to be, for what you particularly need, a home equity line of credit is going to be the better, cheaper, more controlled way to go than a reverse mortgage. All right. Thanks so much for your call. 404-872-0750. Marie joins me on the line. Hi, Marie.
Hi.
What's going on?
Well, my mother and father have a house in Marietta. They're with me. They've got some health issues. And I like the advice you gave the gentleman about not changing it over.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an only child, so she needs to sell it, needs to get rid of it, really.
Okay.
She has a little bit of equity line on it.
Uh-huh.
About 30-something, I think. And But the insured on the house is like 100 something. It's got a lot of issues. And I didn't know what to do, if I could get a realtor. You hear these signs, these people up saying, we'll buy ugly houses or that kind of deal.
And yeah, those guys are real estate investors. That's actually a national franchise, the We Buy Ugly Homes guys with the yellow signs. So let's talk a little bit about your parents' health issues. What kind of health issues do they have, and are they now living with you?
Well, we've got like a duplex situation, so I caretake them. I'm taking care of them. They got their own little spot.
But then they have another house. They have a separate house that you're trying to sell.
Well, just renting it, actually.
Renting their house.
They're renting where they're at. They're near me, so they're renting next to me, because the one that we're in over there is just not livable, really.
Okay, so let me back up, because I think I'm a little bit confused.
I'm sorry.
Your parents own a house where?
Marietta.
And where are they living now?
They're up in Athens.
They're in Athens. And where are you?
Athens, right now.
Okay, so the house in Marietta, who's in the house in Marietta?
No one right now.
Okay. Is it rentable?
No, I don't think it is. No, it's not.
Okay.
It'll need the whole plumbing and everything in order.
Okay. Is it a teardown?
I think it definitely is a teardown.
Okay. So then you should talk to a real estate agent who specializes in investment properties, residential investment properties, and talk to a couple of different people who sell frequently in the area, and then about selling that house. Now, are you the financial, do you have a power of attorney for financial matters for them, or are they mentally fit?
I'm already been making decisions, and
but are you legally
power of attorney? No, I'm trying to do that.
Okay.
I want to do that. It's just I hadn't been able to do that yet.
Are they competent mentally?
My dad has got dementia, and my mother is competent.
Okay, so if your father is a co-owner and your mother does not have power of attorney for your dad, and your dad has legal dementia, it may be...
It's not really legal, but, I mean, it hasn't been... I mean, the doctor did say he was that way, so...
If you put a piece of paper in front of your father, is he going to know what it is when he signs his name?
Yeah, you have to explain it to him. He can read it.
Does he understand
it's just
it?
Memory part of it, you know, just going.
Marie,
I'm here.
Listen to me. You're going to have to move very quickly if you want to get this done. Because dementia is a problem. If anybody contests it, now I know you're the only child, but there could be cousins, there could be other people who just want to get in your way.
And it
could be a huge issue for your father to sign documents and then be deemed legally incompetent to have signed them. It can really mess things up. So if your mother is on board, you've got to get a power of attorney into your mother's name right now, this week.
She was on board for me to get power of attorney for both of them,
which is totally fine. But you've got to do something soon, and you're going to have a lawyer help you, an estate attorney help you draft up those documents, and then get that transferred over. When somebody has dementia, you cannot mess around with, timing, and you really need to do things by the book. You need to find an estate attorney, and you need to get this done and get it done in the next 2 weeks so that everything is in order. Once it's in order, then your mother or you, if you've got financial power of attorney for both of them, and you also need medical power of attorney for health. And once that's done, then you can talk to realtors now about what they think it would sell for and how to sell it quickly and all the rest, and then you just can move forward and get that done. But you've got to get the paperwork done first, get that house sold second, get that money transferred in the appropriate way to an account, and since your dad will be transferred that over, the power of attorney, you'll have to get all these other things set up, and an estate or an elder care attorney can help you do that. But there's a whole long list of stuff that has to get done here.
So the power of attorney is really the thing I really need to do first.
It's huge. Power of attorney for financial matters and health care. It's two separate powers of attorney. And then once that happens, then you'll be able to transfer the property into a trust or get it sold or whatever it is that you guys all think is going to be the best way to go. and the attorney can help you do it quickly and will help advise you on what is the best thing to do once you've done that.
Okay, how do you get power? I'm sorry to take up your time, but how does they get you get power of attorney?
There's a piece of paper that gives the power of attorney to somebody. It designates that person as the agent, the agent for the power of attorney. And so it's a legal document that gets drafted by the attorney, and then your parents sign it and you sign it. That's why it's important that your father be deemed mentally competent to sign it.
Okay.
And that's why you have to move quickly, because if he is not deemed mentally competent, then you have to go to court to get it done, and it's much more expensive and time-consuming.
Okay. So that's what I need to do.
Right.
Okay.
And since you are the only child and your parents have health issues, it is far better to get this done ahead of time and make sure that all the paperwork is in order. So what happened, you know, with dementia, your father, if he's in good health otherwise, but he can linger for years and years, and you have to plan for that.
Mm-hmm.
And your mom may fail physically but be fine mentally, and you have to plan for that too.
Mm-hmm.
And so the different paperwork that you get signed, you know, you need to understand what their wishes are, you need to understand all the rest. That's all going to fall to you as an only child, and what I'm trying to do is get you to a place where you'll just be able to focus on the emotional aspect of it and the physical aspect, and all the paperwork will already be done.
Okay.
It's overwhelming. I know what I'm talking
about.
It's overwhelming. I know.
I'm already making decisions, and the doctor's already asking me questions to do stuff, and I'm
right,
already
and you're not,
doing that.
Yeah, but you're not even legally able to do that. So the doctors can get in trouble for doing that. So you want to, your doctors need your parents' permission to even tell you all that stuff. And maybe they have it verbally, but they don't have it in writing. And if something happens and they wind up in the hospital, you may not be able to make those decisions for them. Because
well,
the hospital...
They have a social worker, and I'm going to talk to them in the hospital. Is that a good idea?
I think what you need to do, you can talk to the social worker, but you're really going to have to find an attorney who can help you walk through all of these different issues that you're facing and can help you line up the documents that you need. And that's why I want you to get on it this week before your parents get any sicker, because this is just really, really important stuff. There's a lot of documentation, and you want to, again, focus on your parents and not on the documents. This is a way to do that. And you can certainly email me, Marie, at questions@thinkglink.com if you have need more information. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB.
Elise Glink, Sundays on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours.
It's 12:56 on the Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours. Our number, 404-872-0750. You can always find me on Twitter, at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. I have a Facebook fan page with, I don't know, 6,000-plus people, so you can follow me there on Facebook. What we do on Facebook every week is we run through the different questions that I do in my syndicated column, and we give you the option to comment on it and even provide your own solutions, and do you know the answer? So there's a lot of fun stuff going on the Facebook page. So you can do both of those things, or if you've got other questions that you want to ask off air, you can email me at questions@thinkglink.com. And I'm going to put a plug in for my thinklinkstore.com, where you've got the Intentional Investor Series, and if you want a huge discount, use Buy Now, B-U-Y-N-O-W. That's the secret, super secret code for a huge discount on our Intentional Investor, How to Be Wildly Successful in Real Estate series. But there are also, you know, a dozen plus ebooks that would probably help you do a whole lot of different kinds of things. In fact, I think there's a couple of dozen. So check out thinkglinkstore.com. All right, 56 minutes past the hour. Deborah joins me on the line from Ackworth. Hi, Deborah.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. What's on your mind today? How can I help?
Well, I heard you talking with a previous caller about, she was asking questions about a reverse mortgage, and I am just not clear on what that is or if it would be any benefit to me.
Sure. So a reverse mortgage is completely misnamed, except, but it does something very different from a regular mortgage. So if you are 62 years of age or over, if you own your home outright or have a very small mortgage, if you are having cash flow issues, what you can do is take out a reverse mortgage, which essentially you get money from the property, but you don't have to pay any of it back until you sell the home or leave it permanently. So if you're old and you go live in an assisted living facility, for example, and the property would get sold, then the reverse mortgage would have to be paid off. The money that you take out accrues at a predetermined interest rate, and there are fees up front. So it's basically called a reverse mortgage, but it's not as if they pay you. You just don't have to pay it back until the property is sold. However, you still have to pay the real estate taxes and insurance, and if you don't, that can cause huge problems, and the property can get sold out from under you.
Okay.
So if you're not 62 years of age or older, and if you have a huge mortgage on your property, that probably isn't going to be the right thing for you. Does that help with an explanation?
Yeah, I'll be 62 next year, and the house will be paid off next year.
Well, that's perfect, as long as you're retiring, but you know, getting a reverse mortgage, you know, you'd have to want to stay in that house, not be able to afford to make huge repairs, changes, and all the rest. And still, I would recommend getting a home equity line of credit before taking out a reverse mortgage. Our time is up, Deborah, but if you've got more questions, and anybody who's listening can always email me at questions@thinklink.com, go to the Facebook page, follow me on Twitter. There's all kinds of ways to interact with all the ThinkLink information out there, and I hope you do. Have a great week, everybody. I'll be back next week on the Elise Klink Show, Rebuilding America, One House at a Time, starting with yours on WSB.